Expel the dicks from your body.
Don't, you won't even work at Dick's Sporting Goods.
Expel thine dicks.
To thine dicks be true.
Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face, episode 7. I'm Dan.
I am Sean.
You are ready to go.
I am weird today.
We are, you are no longer mild-mannered mumble rapping Sean. You're ready to go.
Mumble rapping? No, I am Tom York, bright red pants, Fred Perry polo, dancing at Idiotech.
Coming
in
hot. Okay. So first off, I denounce and reject myself. I apologize because due to my poor planning, I did not realize that last week was the 4th of July and that I would be out of town, and we had no real way to record the podcast. So we kind of just went last week with no podcast, radio silent. But to make up for that, episode 7 also has an episode 8. As you all know, Jay-Z's album 444 came out. It says a lot about the music industry and music culture, and there's a lot of, every single track on that album almost had its own discussion to make, or at least half the tracks on the album. So Sean and I recently just went in on that. And it's interesting because we recorded episode 8 before episode 7.
Yeah,
but both
are
going up
that
at the same time. But nevertheless, feel free to listen to that episode, or if you just listened to that episode and you came back, congratulations, you're riding the Matrix on the right side of the lane.
You're in the Tesseract and Interstellar in the right way, and you're going to end up in Saturn.
Yeah. But yeah, check that out after this episode. It should be dropped immediately at the same time as this episode, so you get double the audio face, which is really just a scam because you should have gotten it last week. So it's really just more like catching up. It's fake news. You want to know what really is fake news? The Jenners.
Oh, fuck me in the butt. Why
so
do we have to talk
reason
about them?
Pop. I am talking about the Jenners, and the only reason I'm talking about the Kardashians, and sorry, I mentioned them a little bit in the last episode too, but they got themselves into a bit of a flustercluck because they started selling band t-shirts with their names on them for $125 each.
It's worse than the Kanye Dwight t-shirt thing, which is, I thought, well, I'd never say that.
What is it about this family and expensive t-shirts?
I don't fucking know, yo. Well, what is up with this family in general? Why haven't they died yet, all right?
Because they keep spawning. That's,
I mean, they've had so much plastic surgery and stuff, they can't die, right?
Like, they're so just, they made a picture. So they made shirts of the Doors,
yeah,
Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, and they just like superimposed Instagram screenshots of themselves or other pictures of themselves over these like iconic band logos, and the balls, the testicular fortitude to do something like this.
Or Metallica too. It's like,
that's just insulting. But anyways.
Yes, because they have no fucking musical talent whatsoever. And it's just like,
They have no talent whatsoever,
what
really.
What the hell do they do?
Regardless, they made shirts for Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin, Metallica, Ozzy Osbourne, The Doors. But the estates for The Doors and Biggie were like, please stop. Don't do this.
Yeah.
And they threatened to sue, called a cease and desist letter, and yeah, this was just in
big
such poor taste.
Yeah, like, so, yeah, that's the best way to put it. It's terrible taste. Like, no.
Like, Kendall, like,
don't you have enough money? No.
Well, yes, but I was going to talk about the Pepsi thing, because
oh, my God, I forgot.
The Pepsi ad from a couple of months ago where Kendall Jenner hands police officers a Pepsi was seen to be like a slap in the face of other like police brutality protests and movements like that. And that was a lot of controversy. And I was just like, you know what? As much as I'd love to scapegoat Kendall Jenner, it's not like she wrote that. It's not like she planned that. The Pepsi people were like, look, we wrote this silly ad. Do it. Because you're Kendall Jenner.
Yeah, and you'll get paid.
But you
heavy
did it, all right? But this is something I feel like you had a say in.
Yeah.
And I think, so Kendall Jenner tweeted out an apology that says, also, I love that people are writing apologies and shit in the iPhone's Notes app.
Wow, really?
Like,
you're not even being sly about it.
Like, our official apologies are being written in the iPhone Notes app, and our president is tweeting give up GIFs.
So, I'm saying our president's Twitter is now official statements.
Hashtag, it's 2017. But anyways, the...
Can the proletarians break from their chains yet, or what?
Kendall Jenner's statement says that, quote, These designs were not well thought out, and we deeply apologize to anyone that has been upset and slash or offended, especially to the families of the artists. We are huge fans of their music, and it was not our intention to disrespect these cultural icons in any way. The t-shirts have been pulled from retail, and all images have been removed. We'll use this as an opportunity to learn from these mistakes, and again, we are very sorry.
What are you, a newscaster on the BBC?
No, no. Fuck you. I'm reading this because I don't read into this shit at all. I think that, like, again, you're not mad because you did it. You're mad because you fucking got caught. You're mad because people, like, didn't appreciate it. These people grew up with no sense of, like, no sense of self, no sense of controlling their ego. And all they're doing is saying, oh, I can put my picture on all these, like, famous band shirts
and make a quick
people
buck.
Eat this shit up. And, yeah, I'm sick of this lowest common denominator bullshit with our music. I'm going to stop myself before I get into a political rant.
They did Tupac, too? Oh, come on. Like, you can't do the Yon Shakur.
This is absolutely fucking ridiculous. And should, like, I'm glad that it was met with as much fury and ridicule and, like, bother as it is. And I really want, like, even though they ceased and desisted, I don't know if that's a word. I kind of don't care because I'm in a rage. I want all of the bands that were, like, appropriated or, like, misused in this sense to sue the fuck out of the Jenners.
I'm kind of down with it.
I want them to be hit like a brick in Mario Brothers. I want coins to fucking fly out of them.
I was about to go really hard, but I'm not.
Go hard. I don't care. I'll edit it out. Worst case scenario. No. Do it. I fucking dare you. I fucking dare you, little bitch. Just do it.
I was going to say fucking... The OG Kardashian's going to have to come out of their grave, come out of his grave and defend them in court.
Hey, works for OJ.
He's gonna fucking put on a t-shirt. If it doesn't fit, he must have quit. He's gonna put on a t-shirt with his fucking Kendall's face on. He's like, it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit.
If the t-shirt fucking doesn't fit, it must have quit.
Jim Morrison's gonna have to stop wearing leather pants in his grave. Fucking down on Oxy and shit. Woo! I'm out. I'm dead.
Oh my god.
I told you, I can't say shit right now. I'm gonna go off. I'm on Joey Diaz and fucking Joe Rogan right now.
Listen up, cocksuckers.
Hey, I'm gonna go. You got the fucking second wheel weed or whatever he says.
Oh god! Man.
Sack of weed or whatever it was.
I think we somehow made this episode crazier than the last one. But, okay. Our feelings about this aside, let's... You know what I would like? No, I'm not going to go that far. Let me just continue. Kendrick Lamar's Element.
There we go, yeah.
The music video dropped for that, and...
Damn.
Can I just... Yeah, damn. Can I just say that I mean, I hate to be a dick writer because Kendrick's from South L.A. We're from South L.A. in a rough sense. He's from Compton. We're from Long Beach. We're not trying to front, all right? But, like, I have relatives in Compton. I've spent much time in Compton. I still think the Compton Swap
Meet... You live across the fucking street from Compton right now.
I think the Compton Swap Meet should be, like, in the National Treasury. And it should be, like, a monument. But no, they're tearing it down for some fucking reason. But Kendrick filled the King Kunta video on... Mm-hmm. Beautiful establishment. But anyways, the Element was my favorite song on Damn.
Yeah,
honestly,
me too.
I just thought...
Yeah, probably.
It was my favorite song, for sure. It's not saying it's the best, but, like, no, it's definitely, like, my favorite song. Lines like, if I gotta slap a stupid-ass nigga... Oh, if I gotta slap a pussy-ass nigga, I'm gonna make it look sexy.
It's so funny. Like, I laugh whenever I hear that song. That's why it's probably my favorite. It's just like, it's so fucking random and terrible that it's good. That's my favorite song on that album. I'm gonna make you look sexy. It's like, what?
Make it look sexy.
What was like, Kendrick, what are you doing?
If I gotta go hard on the bitch, I'm gonna make it look sexy.
It's like, okay, I guess. If you want to make it look sexy, you can.
It's weird to think of Kendrick as, like, being, like, hard, quote unquote. Like, one of those, like, gangster rappers. But, like, this is... the idea of you doing that. And again, like, the song is actually about, like, saying, like, I'm trying to lift up, like, black artists and black music and all these things. And I'm trying to do, like, all these, like, great things for, like, that and that culture, right? But if you disrespect that, if you kind of, like, take advantage of that, if you have too much ego, you're not humble enough, then, like, he's gonna have to come correct. Because, like...
Except if I'm going to slip.
Because he starts the song with, like, I done cried for this shit. I take a life for this shit. And he's kind of talking about, like, how, like, what he's done for the music industry. Or, like, what he's done for the rap industry in particular. How he kind of went in the rap industry from songs about, like, how many cars you have and, like, how many women you're flaunting to sit down, be humble.
Yeah.
Like, that's what he's talking about. That's kind of, like, quote-unquote, like, woke rapping. What did you want to say?
No, I agree. I get it. It's, yeah, the same thing. I was going to go on the same point where it's instead of rapping about having, I don't know...
hoes in different area codes.
And, you know, being a legit gangster, getting thrown in jail like Goosey, even though Goosey is probably the best rapper out there right now. Well, I like...
No offense to the Goose.
No offense to the Goose, because the Goose is cool.
Might kill us.
I fuck with the Goose. He's trying to, like, be a little different, you know, instead of being the same old rapper bullshit that's been going on basically since the 90s, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I see what you mean. I was basically going to more or less say the same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a hiccup there.
What was, I thought was kind of interesting that came out shortly after it was that we had a fun fact that Damn was originally going to be named What Happens on Earth Stays on Earth, which is repeated in the song Element.
It was said, but that's all over on Element.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I thought that would have been cool. And Kendrick power ranked his albums from worst to best.
Really?
Yeah.
Where the hell? Oh, I just got the link. Let me...
No, don't read it yet.
I'm not going to read it.
So Kendrick has...
there it is.
So in reverse chronological order, Kendrick has Damn, To Pimp a Butterfly, Good Kid, Mad City, and Section 80. I might have those last two confused. But how would you rank those? Or have you heard enough to really, like, say?
I thought
it was, like, a rough, like...
I don't know, honestly, because I didn't listen to his first stuff. That makes sense.
Yeah.
His first two albums I didn't listen to.
Good Kid, Mad... Section 80 came out first. Good Kid, Mad City was second.
I listened to Good Kid, Mad City. I didn't listen to Section 80 much. Like, yeah. I don't remember it for real.
Okay. So, Kendrick...
So, I can't really rank them and say
So, Kendrick says that, like, Damn is the best album he's made because it's a hybrid of, like, everything he's done. So, Damn would be first to him. Good Kid, Mad City, To Pimp a Butterfly third, and Section 80 fourth. I would put it in reverse order.
Really? And have Section 80 be the top, To Pimp a Butterfly, Damn, Good, or, well, Jesus, how do you know it's good?
Good Kid, Mad City, and then Damn. Actually, I would switch Damn and Good Kid, Mad City. Because...
Really? Why? What?
Okay, so Section 80 is what got, like, I think that was the album that really got people, like, oh yeah, it was Kendrick's first album, but that really got people looking at Kendrick and saying, like, yo, he's got bars, he's hella talented. He's rapping about, like, really real shit. He's different in, like, his style and his presentation as a rapper. Like, that was just, like, it just has a sad fact of it being so early in Kendrick's career. That was 6 years ago, The Good Kid, Mad City was released, July of 2011. And so he's grown so much as an artist and he's gotten so much better. But I still say that that album was just, like, very, very pivotal to kind of where rap looks like it's going today, with, like, even some of the younger people, like Vince Staples and, like, Schoolboy Q even. Like, that's where, that, I think, Section 80 really split off. To Pimp a Butterfly had all these, like, well, Damn has all these, like, star-studded singles, right? But King Kunta was a banger. All Right was a banger. I was a banger. There's a music video for This Dick Ain't Free. Like,
that's right. I love that song about
this. This dick ain't free. it's usually the song I strip to, actually. But the, like, that song had so much of a clear, cohesive message. I mean, that album, like, To Pimp a Butterfly had a clear, cohesive message throughout. Production was top quality. Damn, the problem I have with the production of Damn is that it's just very stripped down. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's just, like, very bare bones. I don't see a lot of depth there.
I just found a Consequence of Sound article, and it's fucking really wild. It's like, whoa, Kendrick Lamar might be hip-hop's Radiohead. I'm gonna kill myself.
Send me that link and give me your takes on that. How do you feel?
I think it's a fucking stupid article or something that some random person made, but...
Do you mind if I jump the gun a little bit?
Yeah, how about it? Actually, no.
This is makes perfect sense. Let's talk about this. So this is the question I was going to ask Sean, and maybe after this article, he's going to be a little bit more enraged, but is Kendrick overrated?
Yes.
Explain.
There are just...
Okay, I'm not going to compare Kendrick to Radiohead, okay?
No,
because that's going to be a losing battle for a lot of people, and especially for you. Yes, I don't even agree for that myself, but...
No, it's just like the article's fucking hilarious. No, so... Yeah, because... He's good and all, but there's a couple things. I think he's becoming into like one of the celebrity artists, you know, if that makes any sense, where a lot of people just hear the name and you hear a name and you associate it with good music, even though a lot of people won't listen to the full thing. They'll just hear a few songs, you know, and there's so many other good artists coming out.
Is that
out,
his fault, though?
Really? That's not necessarily his fault, but I like his stuff, but I think there's just better artist out there, honestly. I mean, look at fucking Vince Staples. Like, that dude is good. Dude is really good.
I don't want to compare Kendrick and Vince Staples because there's almost a decade of difference in age.
Yeah, exactly.
And one's starting out.
And what I'm saying is that even though he's just starting out.
And like Vince and Kendrick did a song together.
Yeah, they did do a song together. But that song, I hated Kendrick's part. I'm sorry, I really didn't. I'm like,
it wasn't
why?
Strongest.
I'm like, why is Kendrick on this? He doesn't need to be on here. But, like, it's not super, it's not, like, you know, bare bones creative to me, you know? If that makes any sense. It's more of, like, random shit kind of thrown in together. So that's why I've never been a big Kendrick fan. It's just, there's other artists and stuff that have deeper lyrics to it, you know, and make their songs more personable and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, Kendrick does have a few stuff like that, but it's not, I don't know.
I think, in my opinion, and that's why, like, I think maybe why I have almost this bias towards Kendrick is just that I see him as, like, one of the big turning points in hip-hop and rap as a genre. Like, to me, he is generationally as big as Biggie was in the 90s right now. Because,
I won't deny that. He's definitely huge for the industry.
When we look at hip-hop and rap history... we're going to be, like, looking at Kendrick Lamar and saying, like, that is a big point at, like, what rap was like in 2017. And, yeah, I kind of love that I'm living as a part of that. And I love seeing that. And I think that a lot of the stuff he's rapping about is, rap has always been a politically aware genre. I mean, it's simple mathematics, right?
Yeah.
But
it's a simple mathematics.
The way Kendrick has brought that into the mainstream so hard... I think part of it's the sign is just, like, hashtag it's 2017. So, like, all these socially aware things are gonna, like, get to the forefront or whatever.
Right.
But that combined with just how skillful Kendrick is, like, as a rapper, like, he raps very fast. He raps very lyrically. He's very, like, precise. And, yeah, Bam from We Made It,
mm-hmm.
another podcast on Syndicate 23 with Hot Takes, he hates the fact that... Oh, yeah, that was your ice thing. Sorry. He hates the fact that Kendrick doesn't pronounce T's or whatever, but, like, I don't care. He's a very he has a rich vocabulary as a rapper. And I think that's great. So I don't know if I'm the one to answer if he's overrated or not. I'm just perhaps drinking the Kool-Aid too much, as it were. But, ready to move on?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you that.
We can move on to SoundCloud.
Yeah, let's move on to that. I mean, we've talked about him a lot.
Yeah, so we've talked about Kendrick ad nauseum, and honestly, more than it deserves. I'm just, like, geeking out over it. So
SoundCloud is laying off 40% of staff because they want to commit to their future of being independent, which is interesting.
Good move or bad move? Hot take, go.
Yeah, so they laid off 173 staffers, or approximately 40% of its workforce, according to The Hollywood Reporter. So their CEO wanted to, Alex Lyon or Lejeune, whatever. I can't pronounce names.
Right.
I can't remember names either, so that doesn't help.
But, horrible with names. Yeah. Alexander Lejeune.
Yeah, Dijon Long. Mustard. He wanted to...
CEO of Grey Poupon.
The CEO of Heinz Ketchup.
Okay, forward.
He wants to keep SoundCloud independent, you know, not getting not to not get acquired.
So you said that was interesting. why?
Yeah, not to get acquired by a different corporation. It's interesting because that's kind of the first thing you hear of that, if you make, you know, because it seems like everybody's getting bought by fucking Jeff Bezos or something. I don't know.
Sweet Bezos money.
Or whatever random giant corporation. Everything's getting bought out. So, I don't know. It's like... It's good and bad because SoundCloud can piss me off a lot in ways. And other ways, I think it's a good slash interesting way to really pump out music. I mean, because there's so many house mixes and stuff that I listen to on SoundCloud. Because SoundCloud, you know, could have... You could put an hour and a half house mix on it and then not get interrupted. And the sound quality is good. Really, really good.
Yeah.
So it's good for...
It's a great way for artists to put up new music, like, directly. You don't have to go through Spotify. You don't have to do all these
things. Yeah, before Spotify and everything, with SoundCloud. And it's kind of a good way to get it out there. But at the same time, I don't know if they paid guys correctly. And there was kind of a... It was fishy for a little bit.
And, like, copyright issues are a little... Say,
and then the way the copyright back in... Oh, God, when was that?
I'm not sure.
10?
Yeah.
11-ish? I don't remember when SoundCloud even started, honestly.
Do you want to... So, want to hear my take?
Mine is pretty simple. Let's go. I want to hear it.
SoundCloud is the Napster of this generation. I say that because Napster is a company that had, like, tricky legal standing. It was a company
Did they ever get bought out?
Yeah. They got bought out by another company and started selling, like, legal music, in the sense that music you had to pay for it. They had a great fan following, and like people loved going to Napster. People liked that service. They liked dealing with that service. It was like, it's like one of those companies where like you just like them for the company. Like Lyft has a lot of good like social. I'm talking about the ride sharing app.
Lyft has
a lot of good like social credit because they're seen as like the better. They're seen as the better, more like socially aware company. I think SoundCloud is just viewed better by musicians because it's a very direct-to-consumer way to deliver new music. Especially in, like, EDM, the electronic music, like, world, a lot of new music premieres on SoundCloud first. Like you were talking about, a lot of the mixes that come on that people like my girlfriend, who are huge into EDM, like, love listening to and pretty much only listen to. Those are things that, I mean... Spotify could easily do that. Spotify could easily allow artists to like upload long mixes. But the issue is that Spotify would have issues with the fact that a lot of these mixes include unlicensed music. Where like you'll have electronic artists who are mixing in rap songs that they may not have the rights to for this song or like for this mix.
Yeah, so...
Which is something you can do live as an artist, but like not...
But not as an actual, you know...
You can't put that online. Song.
No.
Yeah. And SoundCloud's got that issue. And so I get what they mean when they're saying that they want to maintain their independence. And I think that's good because...
It's interesting. I like that.
I like that it's a really powerful tool for musicians to get their music out there. And I think it's the most powerful tool for up-and-coming musicians at this point. But, yeah, SoundCloud is... Do you disagree?
No, I'm thinking about it. It's just interesting because I can see SoundCloud just going down. Ever since Spotify just kind of took off... I mean, just the past 2-3 years, which just exploded into it, and now everybody's using it.
Yeah, Spotify, Apple Music to an extent. Well, Apple Music is directly iTunes, but Spotify, in this, like, comparison, if SoundCloud is, like, Napster, then you would say that Spotify might be, like, iTunes. In the sense that it's the one that's kind of been a successful one. Finally, after a long period of ringing, the, like, most... artists and most labels are fine with releasing things on Spotify. It's not a problem. Well, before there was some like tension, same with iTunes.
It was really hard
for Apple to get all the labels to agree with this idea of like digitally selling music. But yeah, that doesn't bode well for SoundCloud. Laying off doesn't bode well for SoundCloud, but I do think that SoundCloud has an important community and an important culture.
I mean,
that should exist.
I hope they still exist. I hope they don't pull the Napster and just disappear. And because I do like it for a lot of, to me, it's for a lot of underground stuff and a lot of like,
exactly,
even like school projects and stuff in a way where just it's the real, you know, the garage band type things where guys just upload stuff and see if it can kind of take off as a way to kind of easily share it, you know? And yeah, I hope it stays around. I mean, it has pissed me off in the past, but I don't know, because I think Spotify is the Amazon of music, and that's the evil evil green Wi-Fi cube, Wi-Fi bubble thing, and...
Is Spotify evil?
I don't know. It's borderline.
I think...
It's that weird gray area thing.
I think all companies have to become that at some point, where they get so big, it's like, oh, are we still evil?
Yeah.
Remember Google when their slogan was, don't be evil?
Yeah, and Google's like... But Google's like... I think Google...
Hey, the EU would have some words about Google about being evil.
Man, sorry, let's not talk about that. I was going on a rant.
But I think we said what needs to be said about SoundCloud, unless you have like a last thought.
No, I mean, that's pretty much it. It's just, this industry's really changing, and SoundCloud has been there for...
A while.
And I think it's 10 years about, maybe less. But, for us, that's kind of... Well, I know, remember, I grew do just a lot of stuff when I was younger, going on SoundCloud, because it's just like random house music stuff would be on there, or just... Guys would just put stuff on SoundCloud and say, hey, listen to this.
And, it's free.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say on that.
Yeah. LCD Sound System's Gavin Russom, who is the drummer, just came out as transgender in an interview with Grindr.
really? Sorry.
Naturally.
Sorry, I laughed at that.
So, yeah, I think it's good that people around the sphere, like, in sports, with Caitlyn Jenner or with music and LCD Sound System. I mean, this isn't a dangerous thing. I want to know if people will stop going to LCD Sound System shows because they have a trans drummer. But no, I think it's overall a positive thing and good for her. It's going to be one of those weird things where I have to get used to saying him and her. But, you know, progress. Cool.
I mean, that's my whole thing. And then there's the whole change. I mean, we can't get too much into it because we're a bit too political.
It's like driving your car against the sidewalk, and the sidewalk is politics, and the car is this topic.
Yeah, it's hard for me. It's like, to me, I don't care if you're transgender or whatever, but to me, it's like such a rare thing to do or whatnot, where it's like somebody's like, hey, yo, I was about to go like kind of wild, but I was like, hey, yo, I'm not supposed to have a penis. Like, this thing shouldn't be there. You know, but it's like so rare for me for that to actually happen. But it's like out of nowhere this year, it's just like exploding everywhere. I go, of it's like kind of fishy, you know, and some of it's like, okay, good. People are like, you know, actually talking about it. Cause I've known two people that are transgender and they're like, you like needed that. Yeah. You turned back and you can 98.
Tell. Yeah. You
know? Yeah. And it's like, no, this dude is like. No, this is totally backwards. It's like super freaking rare to me that it should happen that way.
I think that.
But that's just
again, like
very on the political part.
Again, let's continue driving slightly.
So, yeah.
I think this is kind of what happened with, like, in the early 2000s when we were super young about like marriage equality. Like, keep in mind, Ellen DeGeneres came out of the closet, and that was a big thing.
That's right.
The year we
were
born.
And she got like. she got ousted from all her networks and shit.
Yeah, that was rough. That was the year we were born. And it took her until, like, Finding Nemo to kind of really, like, get back on her
And then get her own show and everything. Yeah, so, like,
four or five? Not long ago would your statement about, like, I just don't know how common this is would have been true for just, like, gay and lesbian people. And so, I also don't know how common this is either. And
yeah, I don't think anyone really knows.
I think there's two things to not make this super political. It's like, right. A... We're going to find out how common it is, or because of people like Gavin who are coming out. And I'm not sure if, like, Gavin has chosen a new name to go with the transition yet or not. But, people like Gavin coming out and saying that they are trans and this is who they are. And people in, like I was saying, in sports, in art, in politics, in all these different things, in all walks of life, as these people start... coming out and sharing their story, it will encourage others to do the same. And so I think that's, you'll find it there. And B, I think we're, again, really trying not to skirt this, but I think we're starting to learn that all these things exist on a spectrum.
Like, yeah.
Same-sex attraction exists on a spectrum. Like,
of course.
For different people. And I think that maybe in the future we'll see it less as a, you're gay, you're straight, you're bi, you're whatever.
Yeah.
And it's more like, you're on some sort of spectrum. And these are all things that we're not going to claim to understand in a music podcast, but, like, it's good that, I mean, at least I think, it's good that people are representing this community in all walks of life. So
yeah, and they aren't afraid. And,
yeah.
Which is kind of nice. So that may be why...
It's still a very bold thing to do. This is not like a...
No. And I guess that might be why you hear it more often is because it's... People aren't afraid to do it anymore. But it's just like... It... I don't know. This one, I will... We'll kind of keep people posted about it, if it makes any sense. And kind of see... It, because we could, it's, you know, a pretty big popular band, and you can really kind of follow it.
It's
in a
popular,
way.
But it's like they're on the end of their career. They were retired up until recently.
Yeah, pretty much. So that you could kind of follow it.
This isn't something like Kendrick comes out as trans.
Yeah,
no, that would be huge.
That'd be fucking wild, but
that would talk about like 3 weeks of audio face episodes just to that. But let's transition. I swear that was not intentional.
Wow.
I swear to God, I was not trying to be cheeky with that segue.
That's really good. All right, well, we're going to go.
Jesus, take the wheel.
We're going to go with Fuckboy Imoi.
Toro Imoi's album Boo Boo finally came out.
Why'd you come with that fucking title for an album, Boo Boo? Really? It's all the things San Francisco hipsters are going to love, but.
There's like a short film that accompanied it, and it was very, San Francisco hipster.
It is so freaking Bay Area hipster, you don't even know. It's like, just, oh my God. You should be riding a 1982 Bianchi freaking road bike or something the whole time. It's just like, all right, this is a bit much.
It's just good. Like traveling through the Bay Area, at least from what I can tell.
Yeah. Album's good. As you said, the middle's kind of boring.
Yeah, I think so I can't tell at this point whether we talked about this in episode 7 or we talked about this in episode 8, but no, we talked about this just now, where you were saying Kendrick, the consequence of Sound article, that was like Kendrick Lamar is the Radiohead of rap.
Yeah.
I think that I'm just starting to notice something that we're starting to do is that we're so far away from the 70s and the 80s for a lot of people. That instead of saying 70s or 80s inspired or 90s inspired, we're saying like Radiohead or like Daft Punk. Because, for example, people were saying that this Toro Imoi album, and even like Toro Imoi himself says, this was inspired by Daft Punk.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he said that.
After listening to this album, no, it wasn't inspired by Daft Punk. It was inspired by like the 70s and the 80s.
It was
inspired by 70s and 80s electronic
funk. He counts material
from
Daft Punk, Frank Ocean, and One Orthix Point Never. Yeah. Jesus, well, I don't know why.
I've never heard of that, and I don't
know
where to start.
It takes me a million seconds to say that. I don't think I've ever heard of that, too, which is kind of weird.
But nevertheless, your point.
But to me, it's just like artists are just randomly stating that. Name drop. It's like, why? I don't hear it at all. Maybe Random Access Memories, but to me, that's...
But again,
it's disco.
Random Access Memories is not all of Daft Punk.
It's not.
Everyone, listen. Like, because
it's look at Homework, look at Rolling and Scratch and Alive, other stuff, you know?
Just because something sounds like funk or disco and has a synthesizer in it does not mean it's Daft Punk.
No, look at ABBA.
Yeah.
70s, right there in the show.
Like,
that's what you should say instead of Daft Punk.
Maybe,
you know?
it's a generational divide thing, but like, we're actually being born in 1996, we're actually part of the generation after the millennials. That's the beginning year. But I still,
really?
Like, apparently. But, I mean, I've been told I'm a millennial all of my life, so I still kind of relate to that, and I'm on the border edge. But even then, you could explain to me, like, what the 70s were and talk to me about that, and I'll go, oh, yeah, it's the 70s. I think maybe just because we're going this lowest common denominator of how we describe music and things. Like, oh, Daft Punk, that happened in the last, like, 3 or 4 years. Let's compare everything disco-y and funky to that. Or let's compare any kind of experimentation to Radiohead, because they're experimental and they did something within the past 2 years. No, just say it's experimental. Use it as an opportunity to teach people about music and stop being so, I guess, cheap. Because it cheapens Daft Punk. It cheapens the genres they're talking about. It's just ridiculous and unnecessary to me. Sorry to rant. Continue.
Yeah, and now going back to his album, it's good, but it's like...
Right. So
it's nothing special.
So around, I think it's a couple songs too long. I think around song 5, which is Don't Try, to Girl Like You, which is song 8, I didn't, it felt out of place as far as how the album goes.
Yeah, it felt like it really should have been on a different album.
And that's fine, but Anything in Return, which I still think is like one of Tori Amar's strongest albums, if not the strongest album,
it is the strongest
had
album by
far. A very good flow through it. And like every song kind of felt like it had a purpose within the album. This feels like a lot of songs with one idea collapsed together, like put together, and then another idea kind of stuffed in the middle. And I don't think that was the right way to put the album together, and I think it loses some points from that. Nevertheless, Mirage, the first song on the album, is quite the banger. I really liked it. The last song is called What Is Wrong With The World, I believe.
Yeah.
I thought that was a nice closer. Girl Like You, as fuckboy as it is, it's also like a pretty good song.
It's catchy. It's like it'll come on when it comes eclectic all the time. MPR, God, I sound like a hipster for saying that. But it's like I hear it come on, I'm like, okay, I kinda fucks with it. I should hate this, but I like it. But it's total fuckboy Amar, like, yeah. 100%. It's a good album. It's just kind of, it gets dry, you know? It gets, like...
Yeah. And that's a problem I have with Toru Amar albums.
Like, you have some salted, you know, you go to In-N-Out, you get a grilled cheese because you're vegetarian.
Right.
You know, you chill. You put some salt in the french fries, but you only got the top layer. So you get the top layer, the good salted one, you get the middle layer, and you're like, oh, man, I'm getting some unsalted. Let me go grab some more salt, put it on. That's kind of what this album is.
What the fuck?
It is the weirdest analogy I've ever made, but if you think about it, it works.
I want me to toss you a string and get you out of the segment.
Right?
Want to hit the...
Basically, hey, Tori Amar, salt your fucking french fries is what I'm saying. Please title this Salt Your French Fries.
Salt Your French Fries, Chaz.
Yes, Chaz, salt your french fries, mate. Like... Do us all a favor. Salt your french fries. You don't even need ketchup. Just put a little salt on it. Did you feel?
Muramasa right. And Damon Albarn did a collab. And the only reason right. I want to... I feel weird and almost like cheap mentioning this, but I think Muramasa deserves a little bit of attention and credit because even though he is very basic Majestic Casual, like the Majestic YouTube channel, with like super soft electronic music,
yeah,
he's like the face of that. But he's also like very talented and very skilled. Hearing him do a song with Damon Albarn, they're supposed to do a Gorillaz track, but apparently that never materialized.
No.
Either that or that's one of the 11 billion songs Damon Albarn's apparently sitting on.
Dude, I don't know how many songs that dude makes.
Apparently Kendrick was talking, I don't know if this is an exaggeration, but Kendrick has a lot of songs on a dead hard drive, and he's just like, one day I want someone to like fix his hard drive so I can get those songs back. But they're gone forever.
Interesting.
Damon Albarn apparently, I know with Plastic Beach,
My God, he had so many of that.
I'm pretty sure the number was around 70.
Yeah.
That he had 70 songs that were just never on Plastic Beach. And usually with Gorillaz albums, you'll have G-sides for the first, D-sides. You'll have like a compilation album of like some of the songs that didn't make it and some cool remixes. But we never saw a P-sides for Plastic Beach.
That would have been kind of dope.
Yeah.
P-sides.
What are we getting? H-sides for Humans? I hope it's Z-sides or something.
That would be kind of dope.
Also, might not happen. Anyways... This collaboration, it's very soft. It's really not all that special, and I was kind of disappointed by it, to be honest. It's just, like, very quiet. I like the way the vocals sort of harmonize at the end, but... No, it was kind of boring. But I do want to mention that Muramasa is, like, up and coming as fuck, and he's really,
The song's called, Blue.
Yeah, BLU.
Like how he's...
Like the French. Shitty phone company.
The shitty phone company?
Yeah, there's a phone company called Blue that creates, like, really... Yeah. Anyways,
really fucking terrible.
Mini music recommendation because we haven't done one in a couple episodes. We don't do it in episode 8. We didn't do it last episode, I don't believe. I'm not doing it this episode. Just taking a little break. We'll bring it back for sure.
You'll see what we talk about later. So
yeah, Muramasa's song "Lovesick." I think that is just such a cool beat, and he makes many other good beats like that. That I think we should give Muramasa a shot. I'm sorry this Damon Albarn track didn't work out. I'm glad that whatever they worked on didn't make it on the Gorillaz album, because if it was anything like this, I probably wouldn't have liked it.
No, it was just...
And that album was already getting kind of long to begin with.
Yeah, and that was the big problem with Humans.
That's that. So Calvin Harris.
What the hell?
So
we have some takes. Calvin Harris has a new albano, a new album that came out.
Funk and, Wave Bounces Volume 1.
That sounds like Music Volume 1 from Daft Punk or some shit. So, Apple Music and Spotify users can stream it in full. And
Probably can get it everywhere. Because if you can get it on Spotify, you can get it anywhere. Spotify gets no love. But go on. It's good.
It's good. Dude, it's like a Gorillaz freaking album where it's just like...
Loaded with
Frank
celebrities.
Ocean, Young Thug, Pharrell Williams, I mean,
My Ghost,
Snoop,
Drum,
Nicki
Minaj.
By the way,
Schoolboy Q.
You have a song called Skirt on Me. Not S-K-R-T on me.
Skirt! Ursa Baby.
Also, Ursa Baby.
It's Ursa Baby.
Ferrari. Skirt! Kill yourself for that. But,
Denounce
like,
and reject.
What?
Denounce and reject.
Denounce and reject. It's a good
Future.
Album. He totally changed the sound.
Snoop. Okay, yeah. So let's, the big elephant in the room
the big,
is. When,
whoa. What we've been ranting about the whole freaking year.
No, so Calvin Harris kind of did it. So
he did what we, Calvin Harris, you know, went on audio, he went on that Syndicate 23 network, syndicate23.co, and got some alpha brain, and sat down, listened to
Calvin
our
Harris
podcast.
Got some supplements.
And
he was like, you know what, I'm listening to the We Made It podcast on Syndicate 23,
and
it's
I'm
like,
gonna I'm gonna run some 442s with, you know, freaking AS Monaco right now, and win them Champions League.
And once I'm done with that, I'm gonna figure out how to make my music better.
And but, not make it sound the same.
But...
Anyways.
Can you hear that we're jerking each other off?
Yeah, right.
But, no, the conversation that Sean and I had off, there are no cameras, off mic, I guess, was that both of us, when we heard this Calvin Harris song,
we're both
we
like, is this
we
Calvin?
Were listening to the wrong person.
Yeah, we're like, this is, wait,
what
like,
I actually,
Calvin Harris is electronic, right?
What I actually said, I think, was that, like, okay, maybe it's just my fault because Calvin Harris sounds like a lot like Dylan Francis, and I just confuse them for, like, white electronic music artists, but, like, I'm pretty sure Calvin Harris makes, like, EDM. And, like, you even showed me a mix that he did with Deadmau5 a long time ago. That's, like...
A decade ago, yeah.
Yeah, like, very much, like, the beginnings of EDM. Like,
yeah,
you can kind of
Calvin
see
Harris
it in that
was,
song.
So, Calvin Harris kind of started out as that. One of the changing faces of electronic music back
right.
in 2008, 2009.
He's kind of taking it from its, like, what we would now call progressive house tech, like, kind of things.
Yeah.
Taking it into the more, like, drop-led, like, build-up, drop kind
Yeah,
of
he was
pattern.
One of the first ones to really do that. Because before, it was, yeah, all house techno stuff, which is what my favorite music is, which you don't hear much anymore, really. You kind of have to search for it. But he was one of the pioneers to really change it into what it is known today. And this album is... just a total 180. It's I don't even know what would you count that as.
So I like, would. I so know, like, yeah. Well, everything else Calvin Harris has done has been very much like pop or not like electronic music. I would say like EDM. This is like kind of like alternative pop R&B. I would say it's really it's interesting and it's really hard for me to describe. It's like as a one-off right now, but I will definitely like echo what you're saying.
It's
that
kind of. I don't know if that's a good comparison.
Because
it's not fuckboy like Starboy, but it's kind of that.
It's got
synth
funk.
Pop.
You know what it is? It sounds exactly like Daft Punk. That was a joke.
Okay, I was gonna say like, damn, can you just walk out of my house and do two laps? I was gonna say kill yourself, but I've been saying that all day. So
and,
two
and,
laps.
And in the words of Caesar on the last episode of the We Made It podcast, go play Frogger on the freeway.
Dude, that Caesar, goddamn. Go on the 405 and go play Frogger, all right, at 6:30 p.m.
That's pretty safe.
No, on a Friday, 6:30 p.m. on a Friday.
No,
on a holiday weekend.
No, you know what they should do? No, that's too soon. Never mind. I'm stopping.
Woo! I saw the freaking hamster going.
That hit close to home. Anyways,
yeah.
It's
good.
It's funk. It's synth.
It's synth pop funk.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say it.
But,
as.
Like,
the
reason why I want to call it R&B is just because, like, every single song seems to capture in a very, like, millennial way, like, certain emotions. Feelings of, like, love, feelings of, like, balance, feelings of, like, self-realization, actualization.
Self-awareness and self...
You know what? We're stupid.
Foundiness.
It's called Funk Wave Bounces, and that's kind of really
funk,
is how I would describe it.
Funk Wave Bounces.
That's a pretty good way to describe it.
That's
the
only way you can describe it. It's I mean, I like it. Actually, I kind of do like it, and it's good. It's different because we've been yelling at artists.
This
to
is something
change
we've been,
your shit.
Like, I've
please.
Almost been sick of listening to ourselves saying this.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
We really want artists to
expand,
take chances.
Do
and,
something different.
And then again, we chide artists when they like take chances but then fuck up. But no, this is like.
This is the right. This is exactly what we want.
This is one of the
perfect.
Biggest changes I've seen an artist make in recent memory and somehow land on their feet still. If
that
this is like.
Yeah, it's good.
You know, I can see Calvin Harris, like, jumping back and forth and going, like, okay, my next LP is going to be in addition to Funk Wave Bounces, and I'm going to be doing more of this kind of, like, R&B, synth pop,
right,
like, kind of stuff. And then my other stuff is, like, okay, we're going back to, like, meat and potatoes EDM. And it's going to be, like...
Or, like, I can even see him starting to try to experiment with EDM and maybe even changing the face of it, if that makes any sense. You know,
yeah.
to this drop thing, which, you know, I've always stated that I think it's really corny and crap. I know you like it, but to me it all sounds the same after a while.
Yeah, I agree with both statements. I like it, but I also agree that it's repetitive.
Yeah, and I could see him now with this trying to do something different with it. You know, maybe like combining the techno underground house stuff with the drop EDM, or doing something, or maybe something we've never even heard of yet.
Yeah.
In electronic music. It's, I like this. It's finally, it's starting to go the right way. I've been saying this for a little bit, but I think the past, like, 2 months, it's starting to, you could kind of see it in the industry. It's starting to change, because people are realizing, hey,
yeah,
we don't like the crap you're putting out. Because even the radio, you know, the radio is going really bad, you know, like, K-Rock wasn't playing, and, like, it was just
well, the
garbage.
Issue with, the
and
issue,
then...
Yeah.
Now, the past, like, couple of months, it's kind of gotten back to where we're actually listening to the consumers and people have been saying this, you know? It's good. I'm glad that people are listening to it, or the industry is listening
in the,
to what we're saying.
In the last slash next episode, depending on which version of the Matrix you're living in, we talked about the sound of the future or the next sound of the decade as it relates to maybe what Jay-Z's 444 outing does. Do you think that Calvin Harris might, with this album, might be starting or signaling what might be the sound of the 20s?
Yeah.
This is a better question. Do you think it could catch on? And then do you personally want it to?
I can see it catching on in its own ways, where you have this R&B synth pop or new wave, whatever you want to call it, it being popular for a bit, but to me, it can very easily get overplayed.
Where, it can sound droney.
Yeah, where I think a lot of big electronic music producers can just grab some names, like just grab The Weeknd or for whatever you want, and then sample them on a song, or use them on a song and whatnot. And I think it is changing, but I don't think it's going to be this per se. I think this is the beginning of it. I don't know what it's going to be. I think it's going to be some form of a blend of pretty much every genre, like, that's been used in the past, like, decade or so. I think it's going to be a blend of...
Which is many of them.
It's going to be really weird, but I think it could be good. Like, a blend... Like, you know who's the best one to say? Is Roosevelt. I think it could be something like that, where a blend of electronic with kind of disco-y themes plus alternative.
Right.
Because to me, the band stuff isn't dying out. You still have our generation of guys still wanting to play in bands and stuff, but...
As opposed to, like, turntables and, like,
yeah, because
Max.
That was becoming popular for a bit.
It still is.
But I could see that dying out very quickly. But, you know, there's just an art to playing an instrument, and I think that's not going to die out. But it's kind of like the whole AI debate of, is AI going to take over, or are humans going to pair along with AI and live, you know, in seamless harmony, hopefully? I think it's the same way with music, with electronic stuff, because now electronic was kind of taking over, and I think with this, it's starting to kind of find its feet. It's just like, you know, in the 80s, when electronics just started out, and it got weird really quickly.
Right.
It got really good, and it got really weird. Like, there was no middle ground.
Yeah.
You know? You either had New Order, which is really good, or you just had some, like, random offbeat, some crazy shit. And I think it's the same thing today, where I think it's going to start to blend together, and I'm really looking forward to the future. I think it could be really good. And with this, I think it's the kind of the beginning of saying, hey, you know what? artists, take risks. Let's try something else. Let's go nuts.
Let's push music forward.
Let's go ape shit.
No, I got that. No,
Thank you, sir.
I think we've talked this a lot and we should move on, but...
Right.
No, I totally agree with you that... Look, all my favorite music is music that blends genres. And if we get more of that in the future, I will definitely take part in that. Really fast, before we continue our, like, last few things, I do know that Arcade Fire has released, like, 2 singles since we last talked to them.
Yeah.
But I think I'm just going to start instituting a rule where I'll talk about your first single...
And then the album.
And then we'll talk about the album.
Yeah.
Unless there's some, like, really special situation where, like an artist starts to make fun of, like, a minority or something. Which is a tease for the Jay-Z episode.
Right.
I didn't sell that totally well or describe that totally well. But, you know, you should listen to the next episode. Or you've already heard it, so you already know what I'm talking about. Matrix! Okay, but that's all I want to talk about. Arcade Fire. I know they exist, and I really would like to talk about them, but I'd rather just...
We'll wait for two weeks? When does it come out? So we'll just wait.
It's coming out really soon. So, yeah.
Because we made that mistake with Phoenix, because there's, like, 2 or 3 episodes where it's, like, single, new song, album.
Yeah.
So I don't want to make that mistake again, because I thought I felt like we talked about it a bit too
much. I don't want to pay too much, hyper-focused attention to bands we just like and cover them super closely, because then I'll feel like we'll have to cover, like, every fucking loose single all the time. And honestly, I don't think all of them are relevant, but...
No, never. Not except for Radiohead, but...
Anyways.
joking.
Just to prove that there is a little bit of justice left in the world, the Fyre Festival founder was arrested for fraud.
That's hilarious. I didn't know that. I just read this on our notes.
For context, the Fyre Festival was this, like, big music festival where tickets were, like, upwards of $1,000 somewhere in, like, near Florida or something, and there are going to be all these artists there. It turned out to be one of those, like, clusterfucks where, like, nothing was planned. All the amenities were trash. Everyone pulled out. It was basically a big scam. And now Billy McFarland, who kind of founded and led the whole flustercluck, now faces up to 20 years in the federal clink.
Wow. Really?
2 words. Got him.
Got him. Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. We can't. No, no.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got him. Put the flight suit on. We're good.
I was about to say something, but I'm not going to say that. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Good. Justice is served. Yeah. I mean, that's all I have to say on that, I guess.
I'm going to add one last thing that is literally, like, late breaking news, but I just wanted to add it. 21 Savage made an album, and you cannot pay me to talk about 21 Savage. I'm not going to do it. I don't care. I don't care that he literally made an album called Issa Album. Because that whole, like, it's a knife thing is so fucking stupid anyways. Oh. Talking to you, Hassan Piker. But... it's
you wear too many rings.
I'm done. But... yeah, I know 21 Savage exists. I wish he didn't. Let's move on to...
So kill yourself segment?
I denounce and reject myself and Sean. Next, I want to have a weird little mini discussion about the idea of the compilation album For a Cause. So, Mac DeMarco, Heems, Hamilton, Lighthouser, according to Consequence of Sound, are working on a compilation album to combat Islamophobia.
What?
There have been... So, England does a lot of compilation albums for different causes and things like
that. They've always done that. Like, yeah. That's always happened.
And there have been all these compilation... things for different, like, well, I mean, natural disasters. Stuff
like, I mean, like, look at the concerts and stuff for Haiti and stuff in 2010. I mean, or look at Africa in the 80s.
Yeah.
Live Aid. That's just the U2 album that they did.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Or Beatles Help.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but what's your opinion? Like, do those... I mean, like, they raise money for these causes, and, like, I guess that's good. So, I guess... The question I was going to add, saying, do they matter? I guess they do, because they raise money for these causes to go to these causes. But...
I like them more as a festival. Like the Live Aid in 80... Was that 85?
Right.
Something like that. Fact check me if I'm wrong.
1985, I think you're right.
Yeah, because that's... I think that's... I remember U2 with the mullet coming out. But Bono could fucking pull that off.
And Queen.
Singing Bad, which is such an amazing song. I like that more as a festival, because to me it engages more people in a way and raises more awareness to whatever that cause may be. Well, it doesn't have to be just necessarily be a festival, but it can be just a show. Like,
'cause I was gonna say, like, we had this conversation about, like, do you prefer live versus, like, live albums? Like,
oh, like, we did have that conversation a few weeks ago.
And, like, you're
I like both. I like both, but it has to be done right. Like, I like, but not in this way, to raise for awareness. Because to me, awareness, it needs to be, you need to engage the people one-on-one, you know? Not have, like, the live album for a cause is okay, but to me, it's just much more of a personable thing.
Right.
If it's done live, because then you can sit there, talk about it when you're there and whatnot, you know, in between songs, say this or that, what you want to say. Or between acts, you can have one of the band members say something for a few minutes or whatever, and that way you can kind of get the point across to the people.
So, Sean, you ready to throw a curveball? They're doing both with this album. So
really?
They're
going to
be doing
Sorry
about I did that. I should have told you that. But they're playing a show, shows in Portland, San Fran. I've never called it San Fran in my life, and I hate myself now.
I'll say,
Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and DC. So they're doing live and an album. Your takes.
Okay, the best of both worlds. It's like, I hate my hat. I mean, that's exact. So best of both worlds. You can get to a lot more people through it. I like the, like, as I said, I love the live thing, because that way you can talk about it. And now, are they going to record it live, like, one of the show? Like, does it say?
I don't know anything about that.
Okay, because if it would be that, that'd be even cooler.
So I think your thing is that you want to record the live experience and sell that. But you want there to be a live experience, and you think it should also be available to the public. And raising,
just like live, like Aid in 85, exactly, yeah, like that.
And raising money for those causes overall you see as, like, a fruitful effort.
Yeah, unless it's truthfully live, which this seems to be. It seems to be doing both.
Yeah.
So that's the best of both worlds, because you can get more sold copies of their CDs and stuff, just because a live show is really good, and they're doing a few of them, so that's good. And try not to totally backtrack on it, but no, I'm glad that they're doing both. I don't like, if it was just like an album, I wouldn't like that at all. But with both, it's good. It's either only live or both. It's not just the album, because just the album is kind of pointless. But
I feel
the two together, I think it could be like an 85, because that was the raise awareness for AIDS. So yeah, interesting. And this is on what, Islamophobia, I guess.
Yeah. It's going to be definitely a more controversial thing, I guess, because you have a lot of people in this country who don't even think that Islamophobia exists. Or you have a lot of people who complain, who, like, will say that, oh, we're not afraid of Muslims, we just are completely, like, backwards as to how religion works. But
right.
I don't want to get into politics, but I'm glad that this album ultimately exists, and I agree with the cause that it's going about.
It's interesting. All right. Well,
We made it to all that. Now, we got a suggestion from friend of the podcast, Tarek, to do songs.
No, it was Bam.
Oh, it was Bam?
Yeah, it was Bam who said
that.
Oh,
my mistake. Then that was a friend of the podcast, Bam, who you can hear on We Made It, which I've said for like the 19th time, so there's that. Also on Syndicate 23. We made it. Syndicate23.co. But the songs that give us goosebumps. Do you want me to start?
Yeah, I'm just double checking on,
because I don't
on WhatsApp who told us.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter per se, but I didn't do much prep for this, but I'm going to say two songs that,
okay,
I definitely.
Okay, hold on. How? Yeah, it's Bam.
Okay.
Until that Monday. Okay, first off, what's the limit on songs? How many songs can we have? Because I have a few lined up.
Up to three. I only have two.
Up to three?
Yeah. I only have two.
I want, oof. Okay.
So I'll, to buy you time, I'll go
with you two.
Okay.
I got it. Like, this is going to be a little bit. I might zone out because I got
to. I have to preface this by saying that songs that give you goosebumps are going to be personal.
Exactly.
And that it's not going to be, it's very hard. It's not a testament to, like, how good the songs are. I'm not saying that, like, these are the greatest songs ever, but these are songs that, to me, they're really meaningful. And I changed my mind. I have three.
So three?
Yeah.
Cool.
All, I think, very varied. I'm going to save my surprise one for last. One, I'll get that out of the way, is Atmosphere by Cascade.
Okay.
Personal reason, just because, like, that song played at midnight when me and my current girlfriend, like, started our relationship on New Year's. And so, that's like, cute. That has some, like, sentimental value to me. And when Cascade played that song at EDC, I will just go ahead and admit that I was crying and, like, singing that song, but could barely get it out because it was on day 3 of EDC and my voice is already dead. But also, like, it hits me in the feels really hard. actual, like, full-on tears. Like, I couldn't help it. But, yeah, just, like, that song itself, the lyrics are all about, like, kind of finding your place after being lost all of your life and, like, finding that with someone or with something. And, like, I just think that's a really powerful message, along with instrumentally being a beautiful song. Second, El Mañana by Gorillaz, from Demon Days, their second album. It's a very different...
I forgot about that song.
It's a Holy very crap. Different song from the flow of that album. Because if I remember off the top of my head, the song before that's Feel Good Inc. It's like slam single, probably Gorillaz's most well-known song. After that is Every Planet We Reach Is Dead, which is like this sort of like neo-blues, soul-funk kind of song. And El Mañana is this very like acoustic guitar-heavy like ballad song. And really there's no... The lyrics are... classic Damon Albarn melancholy. There's nothing special, but something about that guitar and how sad everything is, especially watching the music video. That's when Noodle kind of disappears. That's when they're all estranged kind of in the Gorilla story. And so that song definitely gives me goosebumps because, like, especially if you watch the music video, Noodle's dying. Or it looks like Noodle is dying. And, like, as someone who grew up with those characters, that was just such a crazy kind of thing to watch and see. Along with the music being so melancholy. The third, and I bet you won't see this coming, They Don't Really Care About Us by Michael Jackson.
It's funny because I was going to choose a Michael Jackson song. It was in my top five, but since you said that, I'm not going to. That's hilarious.
What was the song you were going to choose?
Man in the Mirror.
Okay, no, I can see
that. Oh, God, that's heavy. But I have other three. I have five.
Go with your top three.
I'm going with my three, but anyways.
I'll explain They Don't Really Care About Us because...
That's such a good song.
Like,
oh, God.
Michael Jackson is known very much for, like, big, powerful production and instrumentals. Mm-hmm. And, like, some of his songs started out with fanfare. And there are these bass lines. There's, like, perfect, like, 80s sort of drums. But, like, the song starts with kids chanting, all I want to say is that they don't really care about us. And most of the song is just built off of, like, this sort of, like, powerful percussion, like something you kind of hear like in a dance circle in a tribe. I hope that isn't like racist, but I'm like, it has that sort of feeling.
Did he perform that one at the Super Bowl?
He has. I think he performed
that one in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. So there's a live version of it that I remember is like ridiculous. It might be that. I'm not sure.
I know he did it live somewhere, and it
I mean, like, there's so many MJ songs that will honestly give me goosebumps. Another one is Remember the Time. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's good, but that's up there. It's a good pick. I like that.
The other reason I like that is just because, yeah, it was a bit of a racial statement, but I also just read it as a very personal statement, and maybe that's why, around that time, like, as I was coming of age, that's maybe why I became such a hard and cynical person, is, I guess, just accepting that there are people who, and maybe this is a lesson I need to learn now, there are people who will never understand or maybe want to understand or want to care about you. And you can either mourn that fact or empower it and weaponize it to live your life not in spite of people who don't understand it, but just like kind of not caring.
Right.
Like, they don't really care about us, so kind of in response, I'm not going to care about you. And it's a song about bringing people together, and that's just amazing to me. And so
I think
those are my three songs that give me goosebumps the most. All songs that, another thing I had to say by putting in this category are these are songs I really can't listen to, especially if I'm in public, because I will have some type of emotional reaction.
See, mine I can listen to.
I will definitely cry if I hear Atmosphere. I will definitely cry if I hear El Mañana. And, like, I'll definitely get chills if I hear They Don't Care About Us.
So, to me, there's so many things, but to me, these are songs that I, like, just... like, just resonate with me. Yeah, again, very, 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 very personal. So the first one is bringing it back to the 1700s of a one, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. And it is the intro to his Requiem. I know I'm dropping classical music on everybody.
Wow.
But it is for a few reasons. A, that is... might be the best... His whole Requiem may be one of the best things ever written down in music history. But the it's specifically the intro. The first... If it, you get the right version, it should be about 6 minutes long. And it's because my one of my favorite movies ever is Amadeus, which I say everybody watch. Please watch that movie. It is fan-freaking-tastic. And there's one scene of Salieri talking about his whole plan, what he wants to do. And in the background is the very is the intro to Mozart's Requiem. And it's just this dark, powerful message. And I've heard it and everything when I was a kid. And it's just like, it's overwhelming in a way. And it's just like... this just array of human voices and stuff around with it, just literally every note has a purpose of the whole thing. And in the middle, you just have this big drum beat come in, and it's just like, it hits you hard of like somebody that like wants to come out or something. Because, you know, he wrote it when he was dying. He's like, I feel like I'm writing a requiem for myself.
Wow.
Which is so powerful. And it's like that opening is just, oh my God, it gives me goosebumps every time I hear it. I actually have a Mozart CD in my car because I'm a fucking music nerd. And I played that in my car a few weeks ago and turned it up to like literally the full blast. I'm like, I don't know if I can handle this right now. This is too much. But yeah, that one for sure. So the opening to his Requiem. Oh my God.
There's perfect. Something incredibly chilling about hearing an artist's last song.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of his last works, is his whole Requiem. Actually, I don't think he ever finished it. And there's a few in there that are great, but to me, just the opening is just, oh my God, how the hell can a human mind think of that? He has no help. He's sitting there chilling on a pool table, just grabbing out his feather pen, writing out, no mistakes. He never double-checked his work, just wrote it out, put it out, done. Like, that's incredible.
That's just crazy.
It's just crazy. And then second is, the next two are my two favorite bands, so naturally, but it's because they resonated in me.
Naturally.
Second on the list is Popliged, or Untitled 8, whatever you want to call it, from Sigurós, my second favorite band from Iceland. It is a...
Talked about them before on the podcast. I think it was your first music recommendation?
It was like my second.
One of the first.
It was one of my first ones, because they're just fan-freaking-tastic.
It go back and listen to that episode if you haven't.
Yeah. It is about 15 minutes long or so. And the first opening half of the song, about 6.5-7 minutes, is just beautiful because I think, as I said before in that episode, they, for that entire album, there's no lyrics. There's nothing on it because Jonsi, the lead singer, would just write sounds that he liked to put. And this song is probably my favorite song ever. Like, that's saying something. I can literally listen to it on repeat for 3 days and not get bored. I don't know why. This song. It's just hearing his bowed guitar, his vocals, everything in that song. It's just, it is perfect. For that, especially that opening half of the song, that first 7 minutes is just, it's perfect. Like, nothing is out of place. It's amazing. And then the second half, the song switches. Total like into heavy, just a whole big drum thing, and then Jonsi going very, very high falsetto and just bowing his guitar, and it sounds beautiful. And I saw this song live, and they always end their shows with Popliged as their last one, which literally means the pop song in Icelandic. It's kind of funny that's that. It's definitely not pop, but
Icelandic pop.
Yeah,
well, not at all.
No,
but continue.
It's not Björk, but. I heard him bowing, starting the bow, and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to play Popliged right now when I'm in the Disneytown concert hall. And I'm sat there. And I literally
great acoustics
got,
there, too.
Yeah, and I literally got goosebumps sitting there. I go, holy shit, this sounds so good. So that's my second song. It's Yeah, I can literally listen to that song on repeat forever, ever, 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 ever.
And speaking of songs you can listen to repeat on repeat forever, your third song that gives you goosebumps is this Paper Mill by Mad Villain.
Nope. God, no.
Again, oh, again.
Kill me. I don't want to ever hear that song again in my life, except for Alarm Clock. No. So my third...
Context like that is my alarm clock and has been my alarm clock since freshman year, because I told myself, I will make this song my alarm clock until Mad Villainy 3 comes out.
Yeah.
Mistakes were made.
Mistakes are made.
Your favorite song?
My song is in Goosebumps. I can listen to it a bit, but it has to be certain situations, which is one, how to disappear completely from Radiohead, specifically live. Especially there's one on YouTube from, I think, Jules Holland in 2001, because Johnny Greenwood is playing my favorite instrument, which is the Ond Martineau. You very, very, you actually, never mind, you hear it in certain aspects of music, but nobody knows the hell it is. It is the most eerie, beautiful instrument ever, and paired that in a rock song that is about Thom Yorke literally hiding away from... like responsibilities on the OK Computer tour. That's what he wrote the song. It that one will always give me goosebumps because it resonates with me because, you know, I'm kind of a loner, like I'm kind of
lone wolf.
Yeah, lone wolf type. Hence being a pro triathlete, that kind of helps.
Slash not a future assassin, because that's how they always describe those mass shooters, as lone wolves.
Right? Yeah. No. God, no. I'm not that. I have a freaking podcast. Okay. I do talk to humans occasionally, but
you're too introverted, like, to be a mass shooter.
That's my thing. It's like,
I'm so sorry for derailing this. Please.
I could be an introvert and everything, and that song is literally about that, because he's saying how this is too much. I don't like being around people. I'm so awkward. I'm like, everything's overwhelming me, and I could feel the same way about, like, racing and other things. It's like, good God, I have to go all over the world and race against the best athletes in the world. What am I doing?
It's
with
a
my
solitude.
Life? It's exactly. And with Johnny just playing the Ond Martineau, like, perfectly, it's just, it just gives me chills every time I hear it. I mean, the bass line is perfect. It's just beautiful and everything. Oh my God, I can't say enough about that song. So those are my three. My honorable mention would be Hang On To Your Love from Sade. Because holy fuck, that song's like, that resonates with me hard. But that was a very, very close third. Like, I was going back and forth, like, do I put that in or not? But
yeah,
that's, I mean, Sade's, that's so good too. But those are my three.
I will give an honorable mention again to Identikit. The Radiohead song.
That's right. I was gonna do the present tense, but
that's a good again one. A sentimental reason.
Very sentimental for you.
Yeah, my grandmother. It was one of the last songs I like showed her before she passed away, and it was like the first time she'd heard a Radiohead song,
and she loved it. And this is the 2012
when they played it at Austin City Limits.
Yeah, when they played it, it was an unreleased song.
Yeah, back then it was an unreleased song. They were just working on it. The final version and the version they perform live now sound very different from what it was. Before, it was a lot more percussion heavy.
Yes.
But, like, not even the lyrics really give me goosebumps, but there's the context, like, what the song, like, represents for me. It's, like, that kind of last connection I have with her. And just the instrumentation and the way it kind of, like, has this, like, crescendo in the middle where everything starts to get like louder with the synthesizers.
Yeah,
that
it's
part always
so
gives
good.
Me goosebumps. Or
then
he's crazy.
Like, then you hear Johnny's guitar over it and everything, and he's like really pound. Like, you could tell it all means something to the band too when they're playing it. That's a good song. And my other
seeing that live was a phenomenal.
Holy
experience.
Shit!
I definitely cried at that.
It was like me. It's like, I wish we could have gone the second day because they played How to Disappear. And they played Present Tense, which Present Tense was my fifth one. Because, oh my God, that one is, like, that one resonates in me hard. Because it's like, in you I'm lost. And he keeps, like, saying that over and over and over again. Because it's like, that one's such a personal song to me, too. But I guess those are my five. But the three ones are just the most important songs of my life. If I could, like, pick three songs, I'm like, yeah. Intro to Requiem, Pop Legged, How to Disappear. Those are, like, if you want to know who I am, boom, that's it.
I would say
serious, beautiful music.
The songs I mentioned are important to my life right now. There are definitely other ones.
For sure. I mean, there's, like, for me, as I remember when the BAM sent this to us, I'm like, I don't even know where to begin because I listen to so much and there's so many songs that mean something to me. But these are the ones that no matter what's going on, have a place.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
And everything in its right place.
Dude, when they played that live, I was going to cry because I love that song. But that doesn't give you goosebumps. That song's just
dope.
That song's just dope. I can listen to songs at any time, and no matter what place I'm in my life, there's something there. Because I've been listening to those songs since I can remember.
Years.
Listening to music.
Many of those songs you talked about have been around for, like, most of your life.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, basically, as long as I've been able to comprehend music, because Kid A was 2000, Untitled from Sigur Rós was 2002.
Mozart's then, a little new, but...
Mozart was, like, 2010, maybe, you know?
Think that was... No, because remember when he started out and he was, like, doing songs with Dylan Francis?
Right, you know, he's a child prodigy jumping up on stage and he's fourth writing operas and stuff. You know, he's chilling. Nah, so those are...
And then we're talking about Wolfgang Amadeus Phoenix, except we're not.
That's great.
All right, if you have a song that gives you goosebumps, tweet it to us on Twitter, at SW Suarez and at Dan from the Web. Also check out SW Suarez on Instagram as well, because we're going to be posting more pictures of his Traffleet experiences, and you can follow that and, like, dip into that world.
Yeah, I'd love for people to do that.
If you want to see what I think about when I stop myself from talking about politics, you can follow me at Dan from the Internet. I just did a segment on one of the special shows for the Young Turks, the post game. So if you're a member of TYT, you'll be able to see that. I might post some clips later on as well. When I talk about other things, you might be surprised by my opinions. Talk about the left, talk about the right, you know, just check it out,
the extreme center.
This is content, all right? We're putting out content for y'all. Please check it out. Please check out Bam and Caesar's We Made It
Please
podcast.
Please do. They know what the hell they're talking about, yo.
Like, so totally real talk. Again, not a huge soccer person personally. It still makes it interesting to me.
I'm a huge football guy, and it's they know what they're talking about a lot. They know they spit them truths. So.
They love the Bundesliga, so you're into it. But yeah, follow us on Twitter, engage with us on Twitter and Instagram.
Please do.
Share the podcast with a friend who you think is interesting to music. I don't know of many, like, good music wrap-up podcasts like this, so that's why we made one. And
because, yeah, we were like, you know what, people gotta start listening to good shit.
Yeah, so share it, give us a good rating on iTunes. That's how podcasts get really popular and get, like, further out. We really want to see this grow and, like, continue doing this for y'all, so
yeah,
we need some help for that. But yeah, that's pretty much it for this week. Double dose this week, and we'll be back next week with an actual show where we will be doing things back on goddamn schedule.
Yes, German.
And hopefully the Jenners will stop putting shit on shades. Or maybe get sued the hell out. Anyways, that's all. All right, goodbye.
Cheers, guys.